It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station.
It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump.
Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Listen to me, I'm older and I'm wise.
Yeah, well, you're half right.
What is this, amateur hour?
This is gonna be huge.
I believe this is gonna be our finest hour.
Just when I think you've said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Here we go, taking you home on a Tuesday edition of the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Adam Lundy, and we've got you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 46862, the five-digit number, 46862. Tell us what's on your sports brain on this Tuesday afternoon. We'd love to have a little interaction with you. Your thoughts on Purdue, on the women's tournament. What a night of women's basketball last night. If you haven't given yourself a chance to watch women's basketball, you're missing out. I'll tell you what, last night, Adam, I was getting kind of tired. It was getting late, and I, I thought I'm going to doze off on the couch here, and I don't want to doze off with my glasses on. So I took off my glasses watching the TV. It just blurs everything enough that I can't tell if it's men or women on that TV. And guess what? I was watching the basketball thinking, if you didn't know the sex of who was playing, that you could, the pace of the game is quick, the attack of the basket, the ball movement, I mean, everything is very similar. I mean, all of those old thoughts that the women's game is slow, that's not as talented, they're not as athletic. I mean, throw that out. Forget about it. I mean, it was a great game last night. I enjoyed watching both those women's games, especially Iowa LSU. Caitlin Clark puts on a show. That was just fun watching. And now we know that the Iowa Hawkeyes are heading to the Final Four, and Kim Mulkey and the LSU Tigers are not. I'm heartbroken.
They're out. They're gone.
Oh, I get it. The Tigers, they're out. Anyway, Caitlin Clark, you know what? I realized last night she is not just a women's basketball star. She isn't even just a basketball star. She is simply a star.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's become kind of a pop culture icon just because of her basketball playing. But she far surpasses those that are just basketball fans.
Absolutely.
I mean, people just love what she is doing and representing women and the skill that she is showing. She's become so much more than just a star basketball player, especially just a star women's basketball player. Unbelievable last night. The performance that she put on. First of all, you got to appreciate her game. I know you may not appreciate all of her antics, and sometimes you get a little irritated that she argues with the officials too much or whatever it might be. Well, let me just tell you something. She is the most talented, overall skilled women's basketball player that has ever played the game. And there is no question, no doubt about it. When you watch some of the passes that she makes, it's as impressive as some of the distance on her three-point shots.
Oh, absolutely. She's always able to find a cutting pass or just make the right pass or some impressive passes that aren't necessarily the right one.
And the way, you know, one thing about it, and I go back and I know I've mentioned John Conchar numerous times, but one thing that I know pro scouts appreciated when they saw John Conchar in person was how he set up a teammate. Like if he was on the dribble at the top of the key and he wanted to get it to a guy on the low left block and there was maybe a defender that was kind of a little bit in the passing lane, or could obstruct a pass, Conchar would take that one subtle dribble to his right, move that defender just enough to get a clean lane to throw the pass and get it to an open teammate for a layup. And that's something you almost have to see in person, just see that, because it's almost a subconscious trait that you've got. Caitlin Clark has that it factor when it comes to passing. Larry Bird also was a guy who had it. And it's almost like I'm watching Larry Bird's ball skills with Steph Curry's shooting ability in combination.
And I also would throw in LeBron James' just ability to get teammates going.
Yeah, I mean, that was the other thing, is you also saw the effort that she made to involve her teammates. Even when she went on a run, she tried to make sure that she didn't become overly ball-centric and you know, go on one some kind of a personal heat check. Yeah, she made some shots. But if you notice how many possessions she gave up shots to get teammates involved because she knew she needed them to try to win this game.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable performance. Still ended up with 41 points, made 9 threes, added 12 assists. And to me, that's the thing. It's a rare player that cannot play point guard, because she is not the point guard, that cannot play point guard and still get that kind of a assist number where she doesn't have the ball in her hands 80% of the time. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's very impressive. And those players that can score but also look to pass first are just some of the best in the sport.
The reason we lock in and we watch is because we never know exactly what we'll see her do next. How far out is she going to hit the shot tonight?
Yeah, she tried some deep ones last night and hit
she
some,
hit
too.
A couple of them, yeah. I was going to say, she had 3 big ones in that third quarter.
Oh, yeah.
But then she did try the one from the logo.
Didn't hit, and
it's a big logo, so, you know, it wasn't that far away. But
yeah, I always, you know, I wonder about that. You say a logo 3, but every court has a different size center logo.
Yeah, so a logo 3 is all in the perspective or the, you know, it's relative.
The court design, yeah.
Yeah, it's relative to the court design. It's just like 3-pointers. It's all relative to where they painted the line that day.
Yeah, in Portland, yeah.
So
might be 9 inches shorter.
Yeah, you could go 5 for 9, but it might be a 4 for 9 somewhere else. Oh, my goodness. You know, they did correct the court, by the way.
I would hope so.
Last night. It looked a little odd, but they did get it corrected. Good. 9 inches off at the apex of the arc. And apparently the company responsible did say how it happened.
Yeah.
That there was apparently a peg hole or something right below the basket. And then that was swung almost like a pendulum.
Right.
To draw the arc line. And apparently that was off by 9 inches. It was too deep toward the baseline. And so that entire arc was drawn onto the court 9 inches too close. I mean, yeah.
Come
look at me with that squinty face thinking, how could that happen? And I'm exactly right there with you. I don't know how it could happen.
Well, at least they offered an explanation, even if the explanation is terrible.
Yeah, I mean, apparently they, you know, it's like, let's measure it from here. It's like measuring the bases in baseball. You know, do you measure it from the point of home plate to the pitcher's mound? Do you measure it from the front of the plate to the pitcher's mound? Do you measure it from the point? And because that could make a difference of, what, 17 inches or so?
Yeah.
So, you know, the bottom line is, they just screwed up.
Get your pegs right, I guess.
Yeah, they screwed up. And they did get it fixed. But anyway, back to Caitlin Clark. Last night, she was fantastic. I thought it was her passing ability that was the star of the show. That one pass that she made that was almost three-quarter court. You know, she gets the ball in an outlet pass inside the other team's foul line over toward the sideline. She takes one dribble, looks up court, and times a pass perfectly to a player on the run behind the defense who makes the catch and the layup all in one motion. Unbelievable pass. She had one where she had a 2-on-1 fast break, and it actually, when it initiated, it looked like it was a 1-on-1 fast break. What did she do? She slowed up and she shifted to the right. Why did she shift to the right? She had to pull a defender with her to her side. Why did a defender go with her when she shifted to the right on a 1-on-1 situation? Because you can't let her shoot the 3 in transition. So she pulled the defender out of the center of the floor and then hit a streaking teammate that was driving right down the center of the court, right through the lane, got her for a basket. And you know, those are the kind of subtleties and the things that she does that I think go underappreciated. Indiana Fever, enjoy your championships because you've got some coming. You've got Aaliyah Boston, who will be more than happy to be on the recipient end of some of those plays. Mm-hmm. And all you've really got to do then is get two or three decent players, and you're going to be competing for championships in the WNBA. That's what a difference maker I think she's going to be. Last night, LSU took that 34-26 lead early in the second quarter. Iowa was able to get it tight at the half, and the third quarter belonged to Caitlin Clark. Three long-distance threes. I think they measured them at, 29 feet and up?
Depends on where the peg was, Brett.
Yeah, it does. The graphics have to have a starting point, and we're not exactly sure if the graphic starting point was right on mark. But
they were very impressive.
I think they measured the last one at 30 feet 9 inches.
Man.
Yeah, almost 31 feet. And Iowa took the 69-58 lead into the fourth quarter, and they would not relinquish it. LSU goes down. I kind of feel bad for Haley Van Lith, who was given the assignment of guarding Caitlin Clark for the most part. Now, they did switch off and change some of the things throughout the game, but overall, Haley Van Lith, she went to a Michael Jordan gesture, with the the palms out and faced upward. It's like just with the shoulder shrug. It's kind of like, I give up. I don't know what to do anymore because Caitlin Clark is too tall for her. She can shoot over her. So you have to close the space. If you're a shorter defender, you've got to close the space much more aggressively. Well, then she just puts it on the deck and goes right around you.
It's tough.
There's no way to win that matchup.
No. Too many options of what she can do.
And so Haley Van Lith had her hands full, and it also, I think, affected her in the offensive end because she was no real factor for LSU offensively. Angel Reese tried to keep her team in the game. Maybe it's just me, but I keep thinking Angel Reese is a heck of a defensive player. She's got great length. She has some an ability to time her jumps for the blocks perfectly. And so I think she's a great defensive presence. She's an outstanding rebounder. She's really tall. But I've never been overly impressed with her offensive skill. And I'm talking about, as much criticism as Zach Edey has taken over the last couple of years that he's nothing more than big, I'm like, why doesn't anybody criticize Angel Reese? Because she has poor footwork. In some cases, it looks like she's just turning and throwing the ball up to the basket.
Yeah, I saw some very odd-looking layups.
Just not a lot of touch.
No.
And I think, okay, a lot of the same criticism probably could and should have been said about Angel Reese. But I kind of feel like if somebody takes her in the top five or six of the WNBA draft, they just picked up a bust. Because I'm not as high on her as a lot of people are. I don't think it was that close of a matchup last night. If that's why you wanted to hype this matchup, that it was Angel Reese versus Caitlin Clark, I think you had a pretty much a one-sided contest in those two.
And, yeah, you have to market the quote-unquote stars, but I think, we saw last year that it was overall LSU as a team beating Iowa, and this year it was, they tried to make it another team win, but it just didn't happen. But like you said, it's just for LSU, it was just a lot of them just being tall and just fighting very hard for rebounds and second chance.
They were so much bigger than Iowa.
It was
crazy. And it was not only the size, it was the length. They would just reach over the top. And Iowa was just doing everything they could.
Yeah, it felt like every rebound was just very, very hotly contested, and it almost always went to LSU.
Yeah, LSU just quicker to the ball. They, they were aggressive. Iowa got too deep on so many rebounds.
Here you go. 23 offensive rebounds for LSU.
It seemed like it was that kind of a night. Anyway, I watched the UConn game for the most part.
Yeah.
I did doze off late. But now that, to me, was more of a one-on-one type of matchup because
sure.
I think both teams really rely on their stars, Paige Bueckers and Juju Watkins. Now,
right.
Paige Bueckers was outstanding. 28 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists. Juju Watkins got the point. She got 29, but she was not that efficient. Just 9 of 25 from the field, 10 rebounds. UConn wins again and goes to another Final Four. I mean, it just... It's crazy. Yeah. No matter how much the odds are stacked against them, UConn just keeps showing up at Final Fours.
Continues to be a national powerhouse.
You know why, you know, fan bases like Purdue get so frustrated and upset they haven't made the Final Four in 44 years? Is because there's teams like Connecticut out there on the women's side that seem to make an annual event of it. Like, it's not that difficult to do.
Right.
It is difficult to make it to the Final Four, especially this year. UConn dealt with a number of injuries. I think they've got like five or six players that have been lost throughout the year to season-ending injuries.
Yeah.
I think they only have like eight players dressed. They played seven, but the three of their five starters played all 40 minutes, including Beckers.
Yeah.
Aaliyah Edwards had 24 points and six rebounds. UConn beats USC 80-73. I thought this was the year UConn was primed to get knocked off and someone else could take their seat at the table in the Final Four. Not so fast, my friend. UConn has a ticket in Cleveland. And I'm not sure if that's a real prize or not to get a Final Four in Cleveland, but enough said. UConn wins at 80-73. I'm going to have all of our Northeast Ohio friends ticked off at the show now.
My my one complaint about that UConn-USC game was the USC jerseys. They were very yellow and very uninspiring to the eyeballs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then the graphic that they used for the USC side of the score ticker was a very bright yellow. And the white score on the bright yellow.
Yeah, that was a little difficult.
That hurt my eyes a little bit.
I thought it might have just been me.
Nope, it wasn't just you.
And remember, I watched part of the game with my glasses off, so it was very, you know, it was very difficult. I thought at the end of the game I was watching some dudes playing ball. it was a fun watch.
Oh, yeah, no, great basketball.
It was great basketball to watch. Very entertaining. Let's find out what else is happening in the world of sports. It's time to check today's top headlines. Here's Adam Lundy.
All right, let's get in today's top headlines, Brett. The College of Charleston has hired former Louisville coach Chris Mack as its men's coach.
Wow.
After their last coach in Pat Kelsey left to take the Cardinals job last week, athletic director Matt Roberts said today that Mack agreed to a five-year contract to take over the Charleston program. Mack made the NCAA tournament nine times in 12 full seasons as coach at Xavier and Louisville. His time with the Cardinals ended in January of 2022 when he was dismissed with the team at 6-8. He has not coached since then.
Wow, that's kind of going full circle. It's
yeah.
like you take our guy, we'll go get one of your old guys. Yeah, that's a good hire for a mid-major.
Absolutely. The Elite Eight game between North Carolina State and Duke produced the largest audience for an Easter Sunday telecast on any network in 11 years. The Wolfpack victory over the Blue Devils final averaged 15.1 million viewers on CBS, according to Nielsen. Overall, the NCAA tournament is averaging 9.4 million viewers across networks, which is a 4% increase over last year. Sunday's first game between Purdue and Tennessee averaged 10.5 million, making it the most watched early regional final in 5 years.
More people watch North Carolina State Duke than watch Purdue Tennessee.
Absolutely.
Purdue Tennessee, a 1-2 seed. Duke versus North Carolina State, a neighborhood rivalry.
That's the DJ Burns effect there, Brett.
I think maybe, yeah. I don't think it was Filipowski.
Quick MLB update here for you. The Twins and the Brewers playing right now, scoreless in the bottom of the first. Other area teams playing tonight. Reds play the Phillies at 6:40. Tigers play the Mets at 7:10. Braves at White Sox 7:10. Rockies at Cubs 7:40. And the Guardians are out west taking on the Mariners at 9:40. Your top stories.
And you know what we've got to add? Weather permitting.
That is important. It's a lot of rain around the country.
A lot of storms.
Even here, it's looking pretty...
Here it's just fog.
I think we might be getting some sprinkles.
Is there some mist and rain built into that?
Sprinkle.
It's foggy. And just a gray day.
Drive safe out
there. Gray day. I had to ask my wife down in Florida, will you send me pictures just so I can see sunshine?
What it looks like.
I don't know what it looks like anymore. Just send me some sunshine. Oh, boy. That's today's top headlines with Adam Lundy. Still coming up this hour, we talk to Sam King from the Lafayette Journal and Courier. Covers the Purdue Boilermakers. We'll talk about what's ahead for the Boilermakers and what does it mean for the program and Matt Painter for the Boilermakers to make this step and this leap into the Final Four. Also, hour number two, we've got the Tin Caps roster, and I figured, you know what? I look at this roster, and there's so many guys that were here a year ago that it's made the job really easy for John Nolan. I mean, just think about it. He doesn't have to get bios.
Three-fourths of his prep
done. He doesn't have to even worry about having anybody's stats sent to him. No, he's got everything because half this roster, actually about three-fourths of this roster, are guys that were former Tin Caps that played here last year.
That's too easy.
He's already got the bios in the system. Just copy and paste and put together your game notes. How easy is that?
Already know the name pronunciation?
Yeah, so he's probably just trying to figure out things to do this week. I thought, let's get him on the show. Let's keep the guy busy. He's probably bored out of his mind. But John Nolan is going to join us at hour number two to talk a little bit about the Tin Caps roster and some big events happening at Parkview Field this week. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Brett Rump with Adam Lundy. We've got the Parkview Sports Medicine text line available for your comments at 46862. 46862. Got a couple of texts in. Haley Van Lith apparently was sick, feeling under the weather. At least that's the reports. And that Kim Mulkey put her on Caitlin Clark. I think that was just a huge mistake by LSU.
I have to agree, and it just made you wonder if Mulkey ever even considered putting Flaje Johnson on Clark or anybody. I mean,
they did switch at different times, and I think part of it was when Van Lith was out of the game, and it looked like they did better when they switched.
Right. So maybe you should have just stayed switched.
Catch on to what's working. Actually, like, pay attention to the game instead of trying to make your fashion statement on the sideline. With that bright green suit.
Oh, she's got quite the wardrobe.
But anyway, last night, was it Lisa Bluter? Is that the name of the Iowa coach? Never going to accuse her of making a fashion statement on the sideline. But anyway, the bottom line, Iowa gets to the Final Four. LSU is not. And Caitlin Clark, 41 points last night. I'll tell you this. We were talking about the Tin Caps. And, you know, I was just thinking about, Graham Pauly and last night, Jackson Merrill.
Yeah.
How about it? His first Major League Baseball home run.
Oh, man.
Just slapped it to the opposite field and it went out of the park.
Little Oppo Taco?
Yeah, a little Oppo Taco. So, Jackson Merrill, congratulations on your first, and I'm sure he's tuned in right now, your first career Major League Baseball home run. But it's great to see these Tin Caps, and to think now that there's a pipeline where it is possible, because of being high A, it is possible for guys to make the leap from Parkview Field straight to Petco Park.
Absolutely. A lot of these hot young prospects, if the Major League club thinks they're ready, they'll move them from high A. They'll skip double A and triple A.
And you know what? They snuck in and had a cup of coffee at the double A level.
They did.
So we can't claim that it was
a straight jump.
Straight jump. But they played more than half the season last year. Jackson Merrill just over half a season, but Graham Pauly was here a good chunk of the season last year. And he's gotten a chance now with the Padres. He started on Sunday at third base. But it's great to see. And so I started to think, this is the time, if you've ever even thought about going to a Tin Caps game, this is the time, maybe even to get the season tickets. I don't know if they're still available. I would assume, since the season hasn't started, you could probably still walk in and get season tickets. But,
it's
not just the Tin Caps. It's the guys that come in from other teams, that they're that much closer to the major leagues. And so, you know, before, when the Tin Caps were the lower A division, a lot of the guys would never make it, right? I mean, at low A, half your roster probably falls out and never gets to advance through the system. But at high A, you've got a lot more of your roster that's making those steps toward getting to Petco Park. And if they have a really good year here, they could leap, because AAA is overwhelmed with players that, I don't want to call them has-beens, but there's kind of like guys that can still play.
Yeah.
But they're not going to break into a major league roster, and yet you want to keep them around.
The career utility guys.
Yeah, it's almost like now the pipeline is from low A to high A to double A to the majors.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of guys spend a lot of time at the AAA level, especially what we've seen with the Padres. And so if you think that that's the the chain where you go from high A to double A to the Padres, you know, you're only a step or two away here in Fort Wayne. And you've got a roster that has a lot of guys that are top prospects. I mean, who couldn't see some of the pitchers that the Tin Caps have on their roster? Guys like Dylan Lesko in another year or two, maybe getting a shot out of Petco Park. Or, you know, Ethan Salas.
Exactly.
Could be a year or two away. So, you know, he's here to develop. Probably got to work on his defense a little bit. That was probably one of his weak spots last year. You know, more consistency with contact at the plate.
Right.
Learning how to drive the ball. That was one thing last year with Jonathan Matthews, was he taught a lot of guys that, you know, trust yourself. Trust your swing. When you get a ball that you can really power up, take a big rip at it. You know, give it a shot. And he worked with Marcy and Martorella and, you know, guys that learned how to power up a baseball that was in the zone. When you see, you know, when you see a pitch that's in that hitting zone, that sweet spot, don't be shy about attacking the baseball and taking your big rip. Don't feel like it's all about just making good contact. No, it's about driving balls, and you've got to take a bigger swing and a bigger cut at it. And sometimes you'll miss, and that's okay. But you've got to take your rips at those pitches that are left in the zone. That when I say the zone, I don't just mean the strike zone.
No.
I mean, everybody's got a sweet spot.
Absolutely.
You know, you go up there and your sweet spot might be down and in, and you get a pitch down and in.
And you can golf it out to.
And you can drive it.
Yeah.
Open up that front side and let her rip, baby.
Love it. Love it.
But it seems like this might be the time. Saw this last night, kind of a tough night for Mastodon women's basketball fans.
Mm-hmm.
All-conference freshman on the all-freshman team, Erin Woodson, has entered her name into the transfer portal. And, you know, I'm sure there's a good reason. It's a personal reason, you know, but from the outside, when you watch, this is one of those things where you feel like it was a perfect situation. Here's the problem I see with the portal is too many people jump in expecting something different than what they're probably ultimately going to get. And this has nothing to do with Erin Woodson's situation. I'm just using the fact that she entered the portal as a good reason to bring up this topic, because it's hard to bring up the topic just by itself. But what I see with the portal is you have a lot of mid-major players that maybe were stars on their team, and they think that because they were a star at the mid-major level, they're deserving of a chance to play at a high-major program and take advantage of some of that NIL money that's there, that's a bigger pool at the higher level. And sometimes you have to remember that you're in the right place, that the reason you were scoring 15 or 16 points a game is not because you were overlooked talent that's capable of playing at the next level. It's because you played 90% of your games against guys like you that were also playing at the mid-major level. And it doesn't always translate that just because you score 15 or 16 or 17 a game at the lower mid-majors or mid-majors, that you're going to jump in and go to a place like Indiana or Iowa, Michigan, and all of a sudden become a 15-point-per-game scorer and an automatic starter at a school like that. Then you have the group of players that are disgruntled from being in a power program, a high major, and didn't get quite the playing time. Maybe they were highly sought after out of high school, and they've been disappointed. For some reason, they've lost favor with the coach. The system doesn't seem to be the match they thought it would be, and they need to get a new home. But here's the problem. Too many of them can't eat the humble pie and accept that, hey, maybe it's better for me to go to a mid-major. What they all want is to find a spot on another high major program. Those schools are often looking for the guys that are going to be there, have a chance to prove themselves. So a guy that goes to a high major and doesn't get it done at one program probably isn't going to go to another program and have a better, more elevated position in a better program than the one they're leaving. What's going to happen is if a guy leaves, for instance, an Ohio State, and they go to an Indiana, they're probably going to end up with a very similar situation, And that's high risk, man, to go from a situation where maybe you didn't play enough and you were a little upset with your playing time to go from Ohio State to Indiana and expect, oh, the playing time is going to completely satisfy me if I just go to Indiana. No, if you really want the playing time, you've got to, again, take that bite of humble pie and maybe step down and go to a good mid-major program where you know you can play. You know you're going to be among the higher quality ball players at that level and trust the system. I don't know how you trust. If you went to a high major program and you got screwed over in your mind, things didn't work, you got shoved to the end of the bench, and darn it, you're going to go find a different place to play. How do you ever trust any other high major program in the future? Because every high major program, with the pressure there is to win, you go there, and the next thing you're going to have is you're going to have that program looking for the next best thing that will replace you. It just, you know, it happens everywhere at the high majors. But for some reason, the portal has so many players entering it where you think they're not fitting the mold. They're not the high major player that didn't get the minutes. And they're not the mid-major player that exceeded expectations at the mid-major level. And so then you end up with players that it's like, in this case, and this is Aaron Woodson specifically, I thought she did everything that she could have possibly done as a freshman. She didn't prove that she's capable of going to a higher level, but yet she proved she belonged at this one. Great program, great culture. And so, you know, I know she came from a long way away to come, and a lot of times homesickness is real and all, but wish her the best. She was fun to watch this year. It's disappointing because you look at the future of the program and you think the freshmen are the future, and then one of the freshmen leaves. That's kind of disappointing, but, you know, I'm sure it'll work out for both sides, hopefully. And, Marie Marcassano has another scholarship to offer. She hasn't had that luxury over the first 3 years, where she's had a number of scholarships where she could really go and be aggressive in the portal. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. We'll come back. We've got Sam King standing by. He'll join the show next. This is The Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to The Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Adam Lundy. Coming up on Saturday, as Purdue plays in the Final Four, we've got your coverage starting at 5 p.m. on Saturday. It is Rob Blackman and company with the Purdue Radio Network. Our pregame ahead of the Purdue Boilermakers taking on the North Carolina State Wolfpack. The game starts at 6:09 out in Phoenix, Arizona. And we've got all your college basketball, NCAA, March Madness coverage here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Joining us right now on our guest line from the Lafayette Journal and Courier, of course, he covers the Boilermakers beat. He was on hand in Detroit this past weekend as the Boilers make a little bit of history, returning to the Final Four. It is Sam King. Good afternoon, Sam.
How's it going?
Going well for me. How is it going for you?
Well, as I was just saying before I came on here, my biggest problem right now is finding hotels and flights to Phoenix, which is a good problem to have. So I can't complain too much.
They don't have any blocked out hotels just for media. Sometimes they have a media hotel out there. Not that case this year.
They actually have several media hotels, and trying to get one of those rooms was its own challenge yesterday. But after some back and forth with the NCAA, I did. Fortunately, I was able to snag one, but it wasn't as easy a process as I would have liked.
Well, let's hear it for Sam. Sam has got a room for Phoenix, which is much better than the alternative. It kind of sucks living in a rental car for 4 or 5 days. Sam, let's talk about this last weekend, because the Boilermakers, you know, so many doubters and so many people, I think, that are like, prove it to me. With the attitude toward Purdue, and the Boilermakers came out and they proved something.
Yeah, and it was almost like, and I wrote this, it was almost strange going into the locker room and the press conferences after these first three games. You'd think, hey, this team just won an NCAA tournament game, is moving on to the next round. And the alliteration I used to Matt Painter after the Gonzaga game was, what's going on here? Like, you're going to the Elite Eight, and I walk into the locker room, these guys look like somebody kicked their dog. And he just kind of laughed and said, well, that's my fault. That's kind of my personality. But it also was a very business-like approach to get to this point. And I think what you saw Sunday was finally some of that emotion let out, probably the weight of the world off their shoulders a little bit, because it's been 44 years. There were a lot of former players, a lot of people that had a lot of emotions tied into this team, and it almost felt like kind of a team of destiny, and it was a now or never type moment. And Purdue jumped on the shoulders of Zach Edey and said, hey, let's go, take us there. And, you know, not a whole lot went right offensively, but Zach Edey was able to get Purdue over the hump, and then the other guys did just enough.
You know, you bring up a really good point about Matt Painter, because we talked about it yesterday, that he has such an even demeanor. He's not one of those rah-rah, kick the chairs and pound the table type of guys. How has that played into what this team has been able to do this year to overcome, obviously, a disappointing loss, to say the least, a year ago? But that even keel, that even demeanor, how has that worked and been a positive with the Purdue results this season?
Yeah, I think just the way that he handled, and it trickles down, but the leadership of the head coach, obviously, the way he handled losing to FDU, staying in the press conference after they told him his allotted time was up and he didn't have to answer any more questions. And there's a lot of reporters in here with a lot of questions, and he stayed and answered every single one of them, and then went back and told his team, like, hey, we're going to have to listen to this for 12 months, and you're just going to have to accept it. We got beat. It's a historic loss. The only way you can do anything about it is get back to the NCAA tournament and make it right. So it's really been that kind of approach all year long. And these guys knew once you win the Big Ten, you get the number one seed again, here comes all those stories back up. You know, oh boy, you're playing a 16 seed. You know, are you nervous and all this stuff? And they've all just kind of handled it from the same vantage point as Matt Painter. And I asked Braden Smith in one of the early round games in Indianapolis, after seeing Illinois' coach come in the locker room with water guns and all that stuff, I said, would Coach Painter ever come in here with a water gun with his shirt off? And I'm not going to tell you exactly what he said, because it's not suitable for radio, but the short answer was, no, he would never do that. So that's just kind of the character he is. He's going to treat you professionally and from a business-like approach, and he's kind of that way with everybody.
How does Purdue avoid a satisfaction issue where, you know, they've made it to the Final Four, the monkey's off their back, big sigh of relief, and now the motivation kind of slips away a little bit? How do they avoid that?
Well, I think that, first of all, Purdue probably did take Sunday night, Monday, to enjoy this a little bit, just because it's been a grueling season, and this was, if Purdue wasn't playing in the Final Four, it would have felt like a massive failure from probably a lot of outsiders' perspectives anyway, just regardless of whatever this team accomplished. It's extremely hard to win in this tournament, but at the same time, this team knows, yeah, North Carolina State probably should not have made the NCAA tournament and wouldn't have if it didn't win the ACC conference tournament. But that team's on a hot streak, is in the Final Four, just as Purdue is. And if you don't come out to play, you're going to get beat. So Purdue's kind of approached every game that way all season long, which is how you get to a point where you're 32-4 and, you know, clearly right there with UConn probably all season long as the best two teams in the country. So I think that, you know, probably was sort of a quick relaxation, but I'm sure it turned back to business already, and it's all focused on North Carolina State and the job not finished.
You know, Sam, I find it interesting because everything that that Purdue fans feared that would happen in March happened in the game against Tennessee, where Purdue lost their three-point shot and turnovers hurt them. Now, it wasn't the number of turnovers. They only turned it over 10 times. It was the 20 points that Tennessee scored off those turnovers that hurt. But Purdue was still able to win a game where they did everything that you thought would beat them. How did that happen?
Yeah, and I've said this to the guys on that team asking questions several times this year. It's like, last year you don't win a game like this, making the mistakes that you made. And the thing that's different about this team more than anything is that it can beat you in a lot of different ways. And I really felt, despite what you may think, the way that game ended at halftime, after Tennessee had gone on a 15-2 run and was trailing at halftime, I was like, there's no way Tennessee is going to win this game, because Purdue's not going to allow that kind of a punch again. I think that was Tennessee's best shot to bury Purdue, and Purdue was really in a kind of a vulnerable situation there, and you couldn't put that team away. And I was just like, man, it's going to be hard, because at some point Purdue's going to hit the big shot. And sure enough, you know, Lance Jones was the one who did it, and didn't play his greatest game offensively, obviously, but man, he really turned the tide in Purdue's direction with the way that he face guarded Dalton Knecht and kind of wore him down over the course of the game. And then for that guy who transferred to Purdue just because he wanted to play for a winning program and didn't ask for any NIL money or, you know, any of the stuff that a lot of guys in the transfer portal are seeking. Mm-hmm. He just wanted to win games. You know, that's got to be, you know, the biggest moment of his basketball life, I'm sure.
Did you ever ask Matt Painter if he considered that to be a good shot by Lance Jones? Because wasn't it somewhat early in the shot clock, and he hadn't had a great game up to that point? I think, what was he, 1-for-3 or 0-for-3 or something from distance? Did Matt Painter consider that to be a good shot in that situation?
I never, you know, some of this stuff gets lost after the fact, and I think there's plays like that every single game where something else happens that kind of supersedes that, and you forget about the moment. But, you know, one of my all-time funniest memories of Purdue basketball is Keaton Grant pulling up from like 25 feet years ago and Matt Painter screaming, no, 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 and the ball goes through the net. And you're like, okay, I guess so. Lance Jones has had a lot of those moments this year where he gets the ball and you just know it's going up, and it's almost like, no, don't shoot it. Okay, it went in. That works. But I'm guessing, yeah, in that situation, maybe you want to run some clock, and I'm sure the whole game plan there down the stretch was, we need to get the ball in the post and let Zach either get a shot or get fouled, whatever it is, because that was really the best option to put points on the board with the way that Purdue was shooting it.
Yeah, sometimes you don't get a coach to admit that really wasn't the shot they were wanting them to take, but, you know, they'll take the points. They aren't going to give them back just because it wasn't the right shot to take in that situation. I like the matchup against North Carolina State. I think Purdue matches up perfectly against them. I think that some of Purdue's strengths will take away some of North Carolina State's strengths. What do you see in this matchup?
Well, everybody's going to talk, obviously, about Zach Edey and DJ Burns. And I'd be surprised if there's more than, like, you know, 25 to 30 national media members who knew who DJ Burns was a few weeks ago. But that's what the NCAA tournament does. It makes stars.
Right.
The same thing about Carson Edwards 5 years ago.
Well, and Jack Golke about 3 weeks ago.
Right. So there's going to be a lot of focus on that. But, you know, everything that you just said is hits it right on the head. I think this is a great matchup for Purdue. And I know people are nervous that, oh, here we go. How about we finally get to the Final Four and still end up losing to a double-digit seed? Well, if you lose now, you know, it's still a great season, and you've kind of taken that next step. But I think that Purdue just really has too much firepower. I don't see any way, really, that North Carolina State pulls this out. But, you know, I've seen stranger things happen. So I'm telling you right now, I plan to stay there until Tuesday at least. So I'm booking a trip to the national championship game. And selfishly, I'd like to see Purdue and UConn. I think America would probably like to see that and see those two big dudes go at it and see, you know, the two teams that have been the best in college basketball all season long kind of prove it in the final game.
Yeah, I kind of right there with you. I said all year long we felt like there were three that stood above the rest in college basketball, and with Houston's injury situation, they kind of fell out. It would be great to see the two teams that have been the best all year long are the two to decide it come Monday night. Have a great trip, Sam, and enjoy your stay out in Phoenix. Look forward to talking to you again sometime soon.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
Yep, that is Sam King from the Lafayette Journal and Courier. He covers the Purdue Boilermakers beat, and he will be out in Phoenix covering the Boilermakers and North Carolina State in the Final Four coming up this Saturday.
Yeah, glad he was able to get that hotel.
Yeah, doesn't have to stay in the rental car.
Oh.
Normally that's, I mean, they give you the information. You get an informational packet, and it says, you know, for booking your room, contact the official media hotel. And usually it isn't that difficult. Now, I've never booked a room at the NCAA tournament, but usually it's not that difficult. So, finding the flight, that's the tough part. And it's kind of a shame that that Purdue doesn't have a charter that allows some of the media to go along with them, those that have covered the team all year long. Because I would campaign for Dylan Sin to be on that plane.
Oh, yeah.
Sam King should be on that plane.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Put him in the back. Give him economy. Make him sit in that row in front of the bathroom, where there's like no recline and you're jammed in. That's the seat I usually get on the plane. When they book the flights for me, I get the handicapped rooms and I get the last row of the aircraft. So.
Oh, man. Hey, well, we got a little bit of Colts news. We'll have to get to that at the top of the next hour.
Oh, I love your tease. That's a perfect one. That comes up at the top of the hour. Also, John Nolan from the Tin Caps joins us in hour number two. He'll be along at about 5:20. You're listening to the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.